Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's Brian Lehrer, and this is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Monday, September 28th. Today on the podcast, an excerpt from the two-hour national call-in special that I co-hosted last Thursday with Maria Hinojosa called America, Are We Ready to Save the Middle Class? In this excerpt, two guests debate how much capitalism and how much socialism is best for the American economy. It's America, Are We Ready to Save the Middle Class? A national call-in special. I'm Brian Lehrer from WNYC. With Maria Hinojosa, host of Latino USA and author of Once I Was You, a memoir of love and hate in a torn America. And our guest, Soren Kass, executive director of the think tank American Compass. He was a domestic policy advisor for Mitt Romney's presidential campaign in 2012, and he is author of The Once and Future Worker, A Vision for the Renewal of Work in America, and Pavlina Chernova, Bard University economics professor, research scholar at the Levy Economics Institute at Bard, and author of The Case for a Job Guarantee. And yes, socialism is a hot-button word in this campaign. Here, for example, is former South Carolina governor and UN Ambassador Nikki Haley from the Republican Convention.
Their vision for America is socialism, and we know that socialism has failed everywhere.
And Joe Biden says, I'm no socialist. Do I look like a socialist? But Bernie Sanders is supporting him, and they work very hard on a joint platform.
I was very delighted that the vice president agreed to work with our campaign in putting together six separate task forces dealing with the major issues of our country. And I think we hammered out some agreements which will make, in my view, Joe Biden a very progressive president if he, in fact, implements what has been written.
So, Pavlina, for you as the more socialist-leaning guest here, how do you see the Biden campaign on that scale?
Well, They're trying to rethink the role of the public sector. And I think that they have moved forward to propose bolder programs that will attempt to revive sort of the glory days of the American, the golden age of the American economy in the post-war era. Big, bold infrastructure investment, protections for families. So I think they're moving in the right direction to kind of swing the pendulum in the opposite direction from this idea, you know, from the Reagan era that the public sector really doesn't have any role to play, where here we are rethinking public policy. I mean, I would like to see, you know, a firm commitment to certain guarantees such as healthcare. But there is the program is very comprehensive by past comparisons.
Or in any different view?
I think that's a pretty accurate description of where the Biden campaign is. You know, they've set up a lot of Bernie Sanders task forces. I don't believe Biden has actually endorsed many of Sanders's more radical proposals, and so I think a lot of people are waiting to see what if anything Biden actually believes and what a Biden administration would actually focus on.
Now, interestingly, in some of the reporting that I've done, I've actually heard Latino Republicans who are saying that they or Latino centrists who maybe didn't want to vote for Trump, but that they're hearing these things about how Biden is going to become a socialist kind of overnight, that AOC is actually pulling him deeply to the left.
Let's go to Sam in Lincoln, Massachusetts.
I just want to point out that capitalism is a system based on the idea that it's best to exploit a working class so a few people can make a profit. Socialism is based on the idea that an economy should organize around what's best for all the people. And in the Scandinavian countries, which take a socialist stance, they've got the highest standard of living. And the last point I'd like to make is that capitalism is based on the idea of racism, and that the whole capitalist system was based on the slave trade and the idea that the best way for a couple of people to make a lot of money is mm-hmm. to enslave a whole race of people. Mm-hmm. That's what I wanted to say.
Thank you very much. Pavlina, does that go too far for you?
Not at all. I think it is spot on. I mean, I think you don't even have to intuitively, even if you're a firm owner, you know that labor is a cost. You know, that's firms try to minimize their costs. Capitalism that is driven by production for profit, for capitalism, labor is a cost. And so we shouldn't be surprised that the tendency will be to reduce wages, remove basic benefits. It's just part of the logic, which is the reason why we need to have some sort of public support to ensure that there is a minimum floor. But I want to say also one other thing. Let's flip the conversation the other way. Like, let's say, you know, a market economy that is presumably delivering all these, you know, benefits. You know, how long should we wait for the market economy to deliver, you know, climate solutions? How long should we wait for the market economy to deliver housing solutions? And I think, you know, it's nobody can accuse America of being socialist in the post-war era. We have gone precisely the opposite way. And that's the era that we've seen the highest inequality, the weakest labor market, and the worst climate crisis.
So we have a call from the South. Yes, Atlanta. And that is where we find Graciela. So what are your thoughts, Graciela?
Hi. I just wanted to say that America was founded on like the idea of capitalism, that if you work hard and you play by the rules, that you can achieve anything. But in reality, that was only slated for a few people, mostly from, you know, European countries that had a certain look, i.e. Anglo-Saxon or white. But the reality is that America is afraid of the word socialism because they equate it with communism. And what I think of, like, what socialism is to look after each other and to look for the common good for everybody. But because we're so entrenched in our own beliefs and with this, like, racist undertones that, you know, only a few are able to prosper, they don't really want to look after each other or the whole well-being because Americans look at each other as different and tribal in a way.
So how far would you like to go down the socialist road?
I had the privilege of actually visiting a couple of Scandinavian countries, and it's just the atmosphere there is so much, it's so much calmer, so much peaceful. You can tell that people are looking after each other. They don't have to worry about paying, you know, if you get sick, or, you know, they don't have to worry about getting somewhere because the transportation system is so good. So I just want Americans to be able to live up to that ideology of, like, if you work hard and you play by the rules, then everybody can benefit and everybody can contribute to the system.
Thank you so much. So, you know, Brian, it is interesting that it is 2020 and we are on a national radio show and we are talking about socialism in the United States. So I do want to just kind of take a moment to say this was not a conversation that we were having in the year 2000, for example, like this. So there is something about this. But Oren, specifically, when people think about the left, when they think about socialism, they do think about unions. And you write that in that basically 1930s style labor unions have basically expired in your view, but that new forms of organizing laborers should be, in fact, you say, a conservative priority. So that's really interesting. What kinds of new organizing do you imagine and that you can see conservatives kind of getting behind? Paint that picture for us.
Well, I guess to back up for a moment, I think it's important when we talk about, for instance, Scandinavian countries that seem to be very popular on this show, to emphasize that those are capitalist countries. They have generous welfare states. But when we have callers calling in and saying that capitalism is based on slavery, or Pavlina saying that labor is a cost and so it's inevitable in a capitalist system that labor is going to be exploited and it's just going to be for the benefit of a few, Scandinavia is a capitalist system. So it's really, really important to have our terms straight and to work with some accurate basic facts about things like what these systems are, what the trade-offs are.
Are those
certainly
countries
are there
capitalist and what you would call democratic socialist or social democracies?
That's right. Scandinavia has a very generous welfare state. And so if we want to talk about the benefit of generous welfare state, I think that's a terrific conversation to have. But the kinds of criticisms that get very casually thrown around and have now been endorsed during this hour by Pavlina, at least, the idea that capitalism is essentially inherently racist or based on slavery or inherently exploitative, holding up the Scandinavian countries as an example is not proving those things about capitalism. It's proving exactly the opposite, which is that capitalism can function in a lot of ways. And among other things here in America, for all of the problems that we have as a nation, you know, capitalism has, among other things, produced the highest standard of living for the middle class, was already a post-slavery society in the North at the time of the founding, has led to extraordinary gains in income across races and ethnic groups, across demographic groups nationwide. And so, you know, unfortunately, and I think this is where some of these conversation goes off the rails, we end up with these incredibly overbroad critiques that seem to be sort of something someone picked up in a university classroom or something, that just do not withstand the very basic scrutiny of logic. And so I think we would make a lot more progress in talking about how to actually make our system work better for more people if, instead of kind of throwing out the most inflammatory and outrageous statements we can think of, we start from some things that I think if we actually sat down and talked about, most of us would agree, which is that we like the idea of a capitalist system. We want to have a private sector and private businesses and private property and people to have an incentive to innovate and to build successful businesses and try to advance their own condition. And then we need to figure out a way to do that in a market economy that's going to encourage the right kinds of investment, that's going to encourage opportunity to be spread widely. And then that also has government programs that do those things and help people who are left behind. And we can have terrific discussions about how to do all those things as well as possible, but saying that capitalism is built on slavery or inherently exploitative and on, you're shutting down those conversations and headed down a dead end. And so if Pavlina wants to actually endorse socialism and point us to a socialist country, not a capitalist country, that she thinks is more in line with what America should be trying to achieve, then I think that we could discuss that. But I don't think she'll do that, because I think when we actually focus on the issues, there isn't a whole lot of enthusiasm for abandoning the many things that are really quite good about the system we have.
Pavlina, you've been name-checked, so you get a reply.
Yes, there are many varieties of capitalism, but you really have to know a little bit about the history of capitalism to argue that this is this benevolent, wonderful system that we should all be, you know, aspiring to. I mean, we know that it began with plundering of resources from peripheries, oppression of colonized people. I think you cannot overlook the history of slavery, and you got to reckon with the idea that we provided labor protections, but they didn't extend to migrant labor. So all of these things throughout the historical evolution of this market economy have to be recognized, and they need to be remedied. We are right now
How should they be remedied, Pavlina?
We are in a conversation of the role of the public sector, the degree to which the public sector should provide protections. I have not proposed the ownership of the means of production by all. And some people could make that argument. So you can't quite argue that I'm saying inherently this or inherently that. What I'm quite clearly suggesting is that the marketing system is an evolutionary system, and the public sector plays an important role in how it's going to look. And this is the conversation we are having right now. What should we expect of the public sector in the next transformation?
Let's get one more caller in here before we run out of time. Marissa in Phoenix. Marissa, you're on America. Are We Ready? Hi there. We've got about 1 minute for you.
Hi, I just wanted to add something to the conversation. I'm really appreciative that you took my call. And I just wanted to bring up the possible topic of, you know, in addition to raising the minimum wage for people, maybe putting some legislature or something in place that could prevent the top earners of these large companies from making such a large difference in income from their lowest paid employees. And I would just love to hear your thoughts on that.
Oren, is that something that you would endorse? And as we start to near the end of the program, you can also put on the table some of those new forms of organizing that we were trying to get at a minute ago, and then we got off onto some other things.
Yeah, well, actually, those two points are related. You know, I think there's obviously an imbalance in power in any labor market between employers and workers, and that's something that Adam Smith recognized and wrote about, and ever since economists have focused on and looked for solutions to. And one of the best solutions is some form of organization giving workers representation. And so I think the way that we want to approach that is not to say individual companies, either you're a union company or a non-union company. And of course, if that's the situation, then non-union companies are going to fight hard to stay that way. And union companies in a lot of cases are going to struggle. But instead to say, workers, we're giving you representation and you will negotiate with employers for your whole industry. So we're not going to have a different deal company by company. We're going to have a deal for the industry.
Pavlina, take our last 20 seconds for anything you want to say.
I think that one way or another, we're going to end up with a different form of market economy. And the question is, are we going to take an active role to rethink what that's going to look like, or are we just going to let things devolve as they continue devolving? So I think that, in fact, there are many more points of agreement that we need to move forward with productive ways. And I think this is the conversation.
That's a good way to end. Pavlina Chernova's book is The Case for a Job Guarantee. Oren Kass's book is The Once and Future Worker, A Vision for the Renewal of Work in America. Maria Hinojosa's book is Once I Was You, A Memoir of Love and Hate in a Torn America. Brian Lehrer, A Daily Politics Podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at wnyc.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.